Kelman on cliffcentral.com.
And look at that, we managed to make it work. The internet decided to come back. I know that we put out some stuff that it was going to be tricky for us to come to you live from Cape Town, but we managed to turn the whole thing around. Everything is back on track. We're live from Cape Town, concluding our Design Indaba coverage 2016. We've been here since Wednesday. Design Indaba, of course, are profiling some of the dopest creatives in the world. We decide, though, that we need more than just the delegates out at Design Indaba. We need to speak to South African creatives. So between now and 6, you'll hear from the likes of Lee Thompson, Ewan Stradon from Expresso is going to swing by, as well as some of the people out at Design Indaba. Let's get it going. Powerful conversations that are going to inspire you, people that are doing what they love. That is the theme between now and 6. Let's see what awaits us on the other side of this. All right, it is coming on Cliff Central on a day that, I don't know, things just don't want to go our way. But this is what happens in a kitchen as well, right, Katja Chef? Sometimes things just don't turn out the way they're supposed to.
Definitely. We had one of those kind of days today. Friday, rush, yeah.
It's a tricky one. Okay, so you're, of course, from Smack.
Yes.
Which is pretty new on the Cape Town food scene. Let's talk about this baby of yours, Smack.
Okay, well, I studied in France last year. And when I came back, I knew I wanted to open something. So that was my mission. And it started off being a pastry shop because I qualified as a pastry chef. But the rent in Cape Town is expensive, yeah, and croissants aren't. So I had to sell a lot of croissants to pay the rent. So the concept kind of just developed over time. And it's now grown into a delicatessen, a restaurant, patisserie, and coffee bar. I've opened it with my chef partner, Devon.
Yeah.
And yeah, we've, so far, it's been such an amazing experience.
Let's talk about this relationship that you have with food.
All right, well, I mean, I didn't really ever know I wanted to be a chef. I only kind of went into that when I was in grade 9.
Yeah.
Chose my subjects according to what I liked. And I only applied to a chef college, like, just before finals. So it's not something I planned. I just knew I wanted to own a restaurant.
Mm.
That was my dream. And so to get there, the way into the industry was to become a chef. And obviously I've grown up with an Italian background. My nonna used to cook. I've got my mom, my aunts, everyone cooks. So I think it's just in me. And I'm all about pastries at the moment though.
Let's talk about formulating what the restaurant's going to be and formulating a brand and that process and how you sort of rolled through that.
Okay, well, starting with the name, I knew I wanted a four-letter word, something quick, simple, and something that I could use as a brand in and hopefully, you know, grow into a franchise with it. So that's where the name came. It means flavors in Polish. And I think the name itself and the logo is like the simplicity of it can work really well to franchise this restaurant. The image I have is if you go to the restaurant, you'll see it's really cool and casual, very simple decor. And basically, the whole idea is to just create an ambience,
yeah,
that people of all kinds can come there. You can go there for a sandwich from the sandwich bar. You can go there for a test kitchen inspired fine dining meal that's brought into cafe style. So, yeah.
Let's talk about the sort of the food space and what food is in 2016 and how it's evolving. How would you say that food is evolving in 2016?
Well, in Cape Town, restaurants are popping up left, right, and center. It's a very competitive industry. And I think as a chef, you have to keep up with the trends.
Yeah.
So you're going to find like a lot of fermenting happening, a lot of just taking basics and making them special. Like Devon and myself trained with Luke Dale Roberts, and he uses the process of fermenting now in his new restaurant. And his concept is to go back to the basics, naturalist. He goes back to the basics in that. And I think you're going to see a lot of that happening in the industry this year.
Very, very cool. Well, listen, you are somebody that is absolutely living their dreams. You're what, like 20?
21.
21.
Yeah.
Doing some unbelievable stuff. What do you think your future looks like?
Pretty great.
Yeah.
I've started early in life. I'm very lucky. There's not many people that can say that they've opened their own restaurant
at
the age of 21. I've got a young team with me. Devin's 23 as well. So together, I think we can grow really well. And I see myself, you know, in a few years' time having a few smacks around, maybe a smack deli by itself, a smack coffee bar by itself. And I've chosen my staff to grow with me. I want people to... I don't just want this to be a once-off once-off thing. I really see this restaurant growing.
Fantastic. Well, I'm so glad that we got an opportunity to hang out with you, a young South African creative doing some amazing stuff. Of course, if people want to keep up with the story of Smack, how do we do it?
Okay, so our Twitter account is Smack Daily. So is Instagram. And on Facebook, you can find us at Smack Delicatessen.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Katja Scherf, thank you so much for joining us, of course, from Smack. And keep making that dope food.
Thank you.
Rockstar. It is Kelman on Cliff Central. We're live from Design in Darba 2016. More on the other side of this.
Kelman on cliffcentral.com.
Right, let's say hello in the afternoon. We're used to saying hello to you in the morning, bro. So now we have to say hello to you in the afternoon.
Good afternoon, brother. Thank you.
I'm glad that you're up at this time, because I would imagine with your early mornings that like by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're KO'd.
Look, I won't lie. Yeah, that's exactly it. 1, 2 o'clock, you literally crash. There's kind of like a wall you hit.
Yeah.
but then you just kind of push through it. And you get your second breath, I guess. And then you just carry on, you know, a bit of an energy drink here and there. Maybe that'll help you.
Because what time do you get up in the morning?
Dude, look, it's early. Look, it's early. It's quarter to four, 10 to four around there, which is like an odd time to get up. You know, it's not like 4 o'clock, whatever. Because of where I live, you know, I need to wake up at a specific time so I'm not late. You know,
yeah.
I pride myself on always being on time. I think I've been late in the 5 years maybe twice to show because of due to fatigue, probably just oversleeping. So, yeah, quarter to four, man, waking up, and then I'm at the studio at about 4:30.
No. Oh, and then you go live, and then it's a whole thing in the morning. It's a lot of energy.
That's
and then
it.
Then it's all over.
Well, that's what a lot of people tend to think. You see? You see? It's not over. This is how it works.
Oh,
the
yeah.
live show, right? The live show, 2.5 hours, that is the fun part. That is the fun part. That is like, we don't consider that work, really. It is literally just a bunch of guys and girls, obviously, having fun in the morning, you know, and this is what we do. So that is really just a pure enjoyment for us. We absolutely love the live environment that we do, just because of the nature of the show as well, because it's so free, it's so approachable, it's fun, you know, we have a lot of jokes on it. But when the show ends, that's kind of where the real work starts. I mean, then you head out on location, and you go do insert shoots, or you stay in studio and you do a couple of pre-recordings, you do voiceover work. I literally just came from voiceovers now. I left the studio 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So it's long days, you know. And then, of course, people, you need to keep in mind that, you know, we have our own things on the side, the events that we attend, the MC gigs that we do. Mm. So there's a lot happening. So I think effectively I average between probably 4 and 5 hours sleep a night.
Jeez, that is wild. I think you told us that. I was listening back to the last time that you were on the show.
Yeah.
And as I was listening back to that as well, I just once again picked up on the fact that your biggest role in life is actually being a dad and a husband. I mean, that's the two most important things to you.
I didn't even mention that, the training, the dad, the family, you know, which I kind of try and fit into
all
into
of that,
this large picture. But funny enough, you know, I look at it from the outside and I tend to think like, oh my goodness, you know, it's a lot going on, you know, but you know, somehow things just kind of work out. Where I do have a moment, I'll go spend with the family, you know. I try to when I don't need to be at the office, you know, go home and support my wife, who's, you know, alone with the two kids, you know, doing the mom thing, which is tough, man. That's a tough job. Respect for the moms out there, seriously. So I try and balance it as much as I can, because, you know, you need to kind of find that balance between, you know, your own personal time and how much of yourself you give to the industry as well, you know. So it's a fine balance, but I think after being in the industry now for a while, you kind of find your feet and you feel it out and you figure it out as you go
figure
along.
Out that flow.
Yeah.
Let's talk for a second about what kind of kid you were, that there might have been indications that this is what you'd look like however many years into life that
look
you are
like
now. Well, this is what your life would be,
dude,
that you would go from the, you know, the TV show
this
in the morning
funny.
To being the dad, to being the husband, then to doing the training. I mean, does that mean that you were just a kid that had loads of extramurals? Does it mean that you were the kid that focused on like rugby and that was the thing? What
it
kind
is
of
so
kid
cliche,
were you?
Dude. It is so cliche because I was one of those kids of, you know, you when you had those career days at school, you know, yeah. when you were like 16 or 14 or whatever the case may be in the locker. So where do you see yourself in 5, 10 years time from now? I always felt so bad because I had no idea. I had no idea. And I was, why I'm saying it's cliche is I hated school. I didn't enjoy school at all. I was one of the shyest guys out there. I was in the shadows, you know, according to me. I just did my sports. You know, I didn't have a lot of extramural stuff. I was a big swimmer. So that was my focus. And I was an average student. You know, I didn't like excel like with distinctions or anything like that. I literally just kind of cruised through high school, not really knowing what's going to happen. So at the end of my matric year, I was supposed to go study BCom Logistics at Stellenbosch. I was enrolled and everything. And I think 2 weeks before, I said to my dad, Dad,
not going
to
happen.
I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. I think I'm going to waste your money. You know, this is BCom Logistics. You know, it doesn't resonate with me. Something about me didn't say that. It said you and just don't do it. And I'm so happy that I had the support from my dad, who's a professor. I mean, he's been in education all of his life, you know, and he was the one saying like, well, I'm not going to oppose it, you know, I'm not going to force you to do it. So what is it that you want to do? I was like, well, I really don't know. I want to do a gap year. So I did that. And I think what really started building my confidence is when I accidentally fell into modeling because, you know, a girl that I met down in Hout Bay, she was a model. Mm. Her mom invited me to go with them when she went to pick up her portfolio at Boss Models at the time. And I just kind of went in there and they asked me if I'm interested. And, you know, I thought, like, you know what, let me just break ties with the guy that I thought I was up in Johannesburg where I grew up. You know, I'm down in Cape Town now. It's a new environment. You know, let's start fresh, you know, because I really didn't enjoy my setup, I think, up there just from a personal point of view. And, you know, before I knew it, I was starting to, not in South Africa, you know, the South African modeling market was very slow for me when I started. You know, I was involved in a sports shop and I was working there. I did my diploma in personal fitness. So that kept me busy. But out of the blue, the agency one day called me and said, dude, let's go to Hong Kong. You're going to go build your book. I was like, are you serious? Wow. Is this how it works? So I ended up for 2 months in Hong Kong for the first 2 weeks. Didn't do anything, obviously, just, you know, the clients needed to get to know you and that kind of stuff. But then I started working, to my surprise, as a model. And if you told me, like, you and 16-year-old, dude, you're going to be traveling the world modeling, I would laugh at you and say, being stupid. I think it really built my confidence. And and I started to grow as a person as well. And I started to move into a direction that I felt was the right direction for me because with every step, I felt kind of satisfied moving that way. And if I did something else, I felt like, this is not it. This doesn't feel right. So I constantly got back on this kind of trend, you know, within the entertainment industry. Up until I was traveling for 4 years abroad, I was having fun. I was visiting countries. I was here. I was there. I was living the life. And then I came back, and that's how things kind of, you know, evolved for me, I think. And I just discovered that it doesn't matter because I am a true introvert, really.
That's okay.
But it's okay. Yeah. I proved to myself that, you know, just because you are an introvert and you are that way geared, it doesn't mean that you can't do certain things. Yeah, it took a lot of energy and effort, but hey, man, you proved yourself wrong. And I really try and live by that saying, especially now over the past year or so, you know, do what ultimately scares you,
yeah,
and you will succeed in it, you know, because I mean, even if you think about doing that scares you, I mean, you're thinking about it, which means you should be doing it. So yeah, I mean, TV was the one thing. TV was exactly that. Live TV was that. I mean, what did I know about live TV when we started?
I think what's really dope is that you seem to own any hang-ups or insecurities that you have, because I mean, the dude that we see every single morning, or the image that you have in the media, is like, I don't know. This dude has no issues. He has everything going for him. He's got the kids. He's got the wife. He's got the dope gig. I mean, it's kind of the reality, but you're still going through your own human experience.
Every day, man. Every day there's challenges that you face. I mean, you don't always feel confident. I come from a... you know, to be completely honest, I come from a background where, you know, because I took a pretty big knock at school when I was a youngster in terms of, you know, my physical appearance, because I mean, I had the bad skin, I had the acne, I had braces at the same time. I was teased and mocked as well, you know, by some of the kids at school, you know, so that really gave me a knock. And for years, I'm not even lying, for years, I couldn't literally look into a mirror.
Wow.
I couldn't. It was awkward for me. I really couldn't do it. And I'm talking probably about 7 to 10 years that I couldn't. You know, it carried over into my modeling career. You know, it came to a point where I was told that the pictures that I was taking was great, but I never really looked at them because I felt so insecure and like I can't actually believe that I'm forcing myself to do this in a way. You understand? But I mean, that cleared up everything. And I thought to myself back then, but dude, you were so stupid. Why? You know?
Yeah, what is your relationship with what you see in the mirror now?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm absolutely, you know, now it's as per normal, you know. It's not that I don't stand and look at myself in the mirror for hours, but I mean, it's not an issue. It's not an issue at all. But it's interesting for me to see how far it has came. And, you know, from where I come, I can't actually believe that is the person that I was compared to the person that I am now.
So with that in mind, it must just motivate you massively in terms of what the rest of your life looks like. If you can have such a big change in relatively the context of a life in such a small piece of time.
Yeah, dude.
Then you must be super excited about what your future looks like.
I am. You know what? I'm at the moment because, you know, you're growing and because you I think the right term to describe it is, you know, I grew into who I'm supposed to be. You know, and I never knew really, you know, also back in the day when you started in the TV gig, it said, you know, everyone's just telling you, just be yourself. That's what's going to make you unique. And at that stage, when people said, be yourself, I was like, but who am I? I don't know. Can you tell me? You know, I don't know. Like, how am I supposed to figure this out? But over the course of the years, going through these challenges and these motions and, you know, the difficulties, you tend to find your space and you tend to find the type of person that you are regardless of your background. The confidence factor is there. It blossomed basically where there was absolutely nothing. So yeah, I am definitely excited because I mean I'm taking on challenges that are bigger and bigger and bigger, you know. That's something that would definitely scare me. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to the future. But once again, I'm just taking it day by day, year by year, you know. I'm not planning 5-10 years ahead because I like to live in the now and do what I can now as good as I can so that I can move forward.
What do you think it is your biggest challenge?
My biggest challenge, still, stepping out of my comfort zone. And unless I am forced to step out of my comfort zone, it's very difficult to do so on my own, you know.
So does wife force you out of your comfort zone? Is she aware of this?
She knows. She
Who
knows.
Else is really good at forcing you out of your comfort zone?
Oh, you know what? My wife is a big support. She gets really upset with me if I start doubting myself, if I don't see myself the way others probably see me, you know, because, I mean, obviously you get days where you're like really down or maybe you had a bad show or you know, something didn't work out for you well. Then you feel just kind of depressed and you're like, you go in this whole like, I'm so depro now. I feel shitty and, you know, I'm not doing well and I'm not as good as I think I am, you know.
But she's the only person that sees that side of you.
She's the only one that really sees that side of me. Yeah. Obviously, you know, I like to obviously also how you conduct yourself is, you know, if you feel bad, I mean, if you conduct yourself in a positive manner, eventually you are gonna, you know, think and respond positively as well. But I mean, there's a lot of support from home, you know, pushing that side. My colleagues as well. I mean, we're such a great group of people working together, and we all support each other. If one of us are down, you know, the other one will come and say like, "Listen, you're right. What's going on?"
The happiest people on television, you lot.
Funny enough, I would agree with that. I would agree
and
with you.
You see it in every Instagram post. I've never seen anybody not smiling. Like, even in the moments where you caught off camera or whatever, everyone is just smiling.
We're happy, but it's also because how the show starts.
A very happy show.
Look, man. You get there.
I think it's awesome.
I think it's great. Yeah. I think it's great, man. You get there in the mornings. You are grumpy. It's early. Yeah. Especially it's when it's winter in Cape Town. It's cold. It's wet. It's dark. But the minute
but
the
you're going to go exercise on that roof.
We'll do it. As much as you don't like it sometimes, you're going to do it and you're going to love it, you know. But it's just the vibe. I think it's great.
Dude, what do you look back on your life and think at this current point in time? He has this oak that was born. His name was Ewan. His surname was Stratum. He had some bad skin when he was in high school. He was good at the swimming thing.
Mm-hmm.
He studied fitness stuff. He's big into that. But when you look back on your life thus far, what's the immediate feeling?
I get a massive feeling of satisfaction.
Dope, that's dope.
Yeah, I get a massive feeling of satisfaction because this is the one feeling that I will never ever forget. When I first stepped I never understood. I always had some kind of feeling in me, which I never understood. It was obviously, I don't know how to describe it, but I always try to explain to people, you know, whenever you look at what you're doing right now, is it in line with what your heart tells you? Is it in line with what you are feeling? And I remember that I moved down when we quit modeling, you know, we moved down to Cape Town and I started the personal training thing. I had the modeling gig on the side, and it was fun, but I wasn't really, you know, I didn't get the feeling like I excel. But the minute I stepped into my first TV gig officially, after I went through the audition stages,
this is All Access.
All Access, yes. The minute I got that call to say, like, Ewan, you know what, you are now officially part of the All Access team, it was like a massive weight just dropping from my shoulder. And immediately I felt this relief. And it's like, you know what, I'm, for the first time, realizing that I'm moving in the right direction.
Mm.
I am going in the exact direction which I was meant to be, which I never understood for so many years. This oak coming from a farm in Honeydew in Johannesburg, who grew up cleaning stables and mowing the lawn for a weekend as chores, you know. You know, how would I ever have thought I was moving in this direction? And I had that feeling in me all this time, but I never understood it up until that kind of door unlocked.
Yeah.
And I felt like, man, there we go. This is it. This is the direction that I needed to move in. Make no mistake, it wasn't easy. I mean, I came home crying, man. I was like, why am I doing this? But it's still, at the end of the day, that I knew. So satisfaction, definitely, because I found what I really do enjoy. And I'm still going to be exploring in this industry. I mean, whichever direction, I would love to do some directing of my own as well, you know, whether or not it is inserts for Espresso or getting involved in maybe a local film, anything like that, you know, I would love to.
Well, listen, dude, you are very honest and you seem very authentic. Everyone that I speak to about you in advance of this interview in Joburg just has the nicest things to say, which must come from some sort of truth. I want to wrap it up with this. I want you to tell me about your relationship with the word validation. And how one can get better at having a more positive relationship with that word in their life, because it seems like a big word in the context of your story.
Yeah.
This word validation.
Validation. Yeah, I think, you know what? I think it is a big one. If I take a look at how far I've come and what I've achieved for myself, you know, I'm only doing this. I do this for myself, you know, and for me, that's where that word validation comes in, because I try and do everything that I do, I try and do as well as I can, you know, and I try and do it for myself, not necessarily for anybody else. The one thing that I've learned across modeling, across the whole TV stint so far, is to never, ever compare yourself to anybody else. Try and find your own uniqueness and just focus on you, you know, and that is easier said than done. It is easier said than done, because especially that was one of the hardest things that I had to learn in the modeling world, coming from the kind of background that I was in and you know, how I felt about things, because I always try to live up like to, you know, to somebody else. I wish I could be like that guy. I wish I had his hair, or I wish I had his build, you know. But the minute you started, funny enough, the minute I started accepting that and said, like, you know what, I cannot kind of compare myself. I am my own person. I'm going to focus on me. I started getting more work,
and more work,
you know, and that kind of validated for me that, you know what, if you just do what you need to do every single day and you do it with a smile, you do it with positivity, you do it with kindness in your heart, you treat the people around you great, you know, at the end of the day, you are going to do, or you're going to feel so much better about yourself just by doing what you need to do in that moment, and you do it well.
Power.
Know? Yeah.
Power. Give me the one liner to take away from Ewan Stratum in 2016.
You know what? There's always one word or one phrase that my dad actually told me many years back.
And he says this with a giant-ass smile on his face.
I love
this
saying. Bigger
than the smile he has at 6 o'clock in the morning.
You know what? Why I love this is because it stuck with me for so many years. Because I think humankind do this all the time. We worry. We worry all the time. And I'm guilty of it, man. I worry all the time. Come on. Living in 2016, fast-paced life, I have two kids, finances, all of that stuff. It's not easy, you know? So my dad just said, don't worry too much, because worrying wastes time. The minute you sit and worry, you're wasting time, you know?
could be doing.
You could be doing something else. You could be thinking positively about something else. Power. But the minute you're going to go sit on a couch and worry, nothing's going to come of it. You're going to waste your time.
Well, listen, what a great story.
Thank you.
And it's going to be awesome to see it unfold because the best is yet to come.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Of course, we can all watch it on social media. It's Ewan_Stratum, right?
That's the one. That's on Instagram and Twitter. And just on Facebook, you can get my page at Ewan Stratum.
You're not snapping yet.
Hey.
Are you into the Snapchat thing yet?
I'm not snapping, no. Bro, you know what? I just feel like with everything else going on with the family, there's too many social media sites.
You know,
it's like,
you don't want to snap yourself getting onto a plane, sitting in the plane, getting off the plane.
I'm not about that life, eh? I am not about that life. I will do the whole Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Once again, you want to do it. You want, whatever you do, what you want to do well, and I feel like I'm going to neglect Snapchat, man.
Yeah.
I'm really going to neglect it.
Leave that one out. Yeah. Rockstar. Well, listen, Ewan, thank you so much for stopping by, and all the best.
Thank you for having me. It was fun, man.
Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
Chris Brown teaming up with Tyga. It is called the Deuces. Hanging out on Kelman on Cliff Central as we broadcast live from Cape Town from Design Indaba. We had a bit of a rocky start though, huh, Producer Cat?
A bit of an understatement.
I mean, I know we say weekdays 4 to 6, but today was weekdays 4:30, 4:40
something there.
But we pulled it together, and that's what the most important thing is. Alright, we still got some power conversations coming up as we wrap it up over at Design and W. You had a good time in Cape Town so far, Producer Cam?
Yeah, well, like, first of all, can you raise the volume in my headphones?
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
A little bit. Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
There we go, yeah.
It's good. Okay. So we got here Wednesday and then Thursday. Those 2 days were like 40 degrees. But now it is freezing. Apparently, it poured rain earlier, but we didn't hear it because we're indoors. But it was flooding.
Oh,
rain.
No. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, let's hope that our accommodation's still intact.
I know.
We didn't get washed into the sea.
You can't see the mountain because it's covered by, what you call it, mist.
I got to tell you, we had some powerful conversations with some of the emerging creatives out at the Design Indaba Festival.
Mm.
And we touched base with them a little earlier on. One such individual, Khali Rekwe, who we're going to hear from in a little bit. Did I say it wrong?
Yeah, it's two words.
Oh.
Khali Rekwe. It kind of means like you can't buy us.
You can't buy us. We'll take a listen to the interview and see if it rings true, if they name their child accordingly. Take a listen. Here she is.
Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
Let's say hello to Khali Rekwe Maimane, a young South African creative and aspiring film director. It says here, Khali Rekwe, and I was just asking you, like, what's going on here? It says you're inspired by irrational fears and insecurities, but I don't think that they're irrational. You don't think they're grounded in something true? I mean, when we look at this work we're going to speak about in a second, about, you know, telling the story of an older generation to a younger generation, that doesn't seem irrational that we should have those kinds of conversations.
I think that's not irrational, and maybe like how that said that doesn't really get it across properly, but what inspired it was, and it's the minute details that I don't understand. So I see where you're coming from, but it is still inspired by things that scare me, the lack thereof or the knowledge of my own people. It's something that is a big deal, and we should talk about it, and we should learn from each other, you know. But yeah, that's what it should mean.
So let's zoom out on you for a second. What is the word that's at the fundamental of everything that you do? I mean, it could be storyteller, it could be creative, it could be designer. What is the word that is the fundamental key to unlocking you?
Narratives. Yeah. Sharing narratives, building them and expressing them in whatever medium they need to be manifested at that point.
How much of your narrative, though, is tied up and influenced by other narratives?
I would say almost all of it, completely. I feel we're all inspired by the stories and things that we see. So, yeah.
So it's interesting then when one kind of starts to deconstruct who you are, because you're built up of so many other different people almost and their story.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's where it's like Tetris almost. I don't know.
Exactly.
And then how do you decide what your narrative is going to be? Does that mean you change the people around you? Does it mean that you gravitate towards certain people? It's almost like building a character, and what's involved in that? Mm. What's your take?
Building a character. I think when you're younger, you don't really get the chance to set who's around you, who inspires you, and who influences your own personal narrative. But I think as you get older, you get to choose. Like, you get to delineate who you want to be around, and that will inform everything about you. Friends or family, after a certain point, you build whoever you put them there.
Yeah.
Whoever you want to be around, you put them there.
You're, of course, an emerging creative at the Design Indaba Festival. What does that mean?
How do you mean, what does that mean?
What does it mean to you to be recognized like that? Is it important?
It's important, and it's a really great honor, and I'm so grateful and excited about it. It's amazing, and I hope... Actually, I know it's a great opportunity, and I want to use it the best way I can.
What's the most interesting thing about you?
How do you mean?
What's the most interesting thing about you? When you, what is it, the thing that you kind of bring to the world that only you bring? Or the thing that is your absolute quirk, your absolute most interesting element? That people say, look, there's that Maimane individual. She brings that. And it's okay if you're still figuring it out. It's just you seem like an interesting person. So that's
no,
what I'm asking.
I'm definitely... Actually, you know what? Being really blunt and frank with strangers, it's a talent. Like, my face lets it all go, I think.
I know you're so over this right now.
I'm not. I'm smiling. It's not... They can't see me. You're a bad person.
No, but I know it's so awkward. It's like to make a conversation with someone you've never met.
No, this is good.
So what's the most interesting thing about you?
No, genuinely, like, I think a lot of my friends do tell me that my sort of, the way I interact with people, that's what they like the most, that's what they dig, that I'm just really honest, and sometimes that's bad for me, but like, yeah.
It's really interesting, the honesty in this millennial era, or the generation of millennials, because we're so dishonest now, we can't even put a picture on Instagram without putting a filter on. So how are you getting honesty right?
I feel like admitting that you put a filter, like, that's one step. There's nothing wrong with it. Accepting all the things you do. That's how I mean honesty. And never telling falsehoods. Don't lie to people, you know? So I admit I use filters. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
You know? I think it's just about, like you're saying, being a millennial, we aren't necessarily truthful. But if you're willing to express and be a part of your own storytelling, because you're building your own stories by doing that, you're making choices... and you're creating an image of yourself, it can still be true as long as you don't ever pretend like you don't look like what you look like in real life.
Tell me about your take on the world that we're living in now. Let's put it in a South African context. Where's this country at?
It's in an uncomfortable place. It's in a difficult place. I think There's a lot to do within people, within our systems, within just the whole general, grander, bigger picture of South Africa. We have a lot of work to do together.
What do you think is our biggest problem right now? I know it's a difficult question, but what's the big problem?
I don't think there's one. I think there's many. And I think to say there's only one problem would be hitting... like an imaginary nail on the head.
Yeah.
It's not... There's not one, there's many. And we just all need to get... We need to look into ourselves and talk about things that we find difficult and hard. And I mean, yes, the economy's bad. Yes, there's issues right now with sort of like race relations and, you know, and now like students and education and there's a lot going on. So I think saying one thing, no, I can't do that.
Do you think that there's enough listening going on? Because this is what, I mean, we've extensively on the show, our big theme this year, the big question we want to ask is, what is the state of the Rainbow Nation in 2016? Obviously, the year got off to a bang with Penny Sparrow and those ridiculous remarks that she made. But what it kind of just showed and highlighted was that we're not having conversations as a nation that we have to be having. And I think that when we start having them, people become uncomfortable about having them, and then they just retreat and have the same conversation with people who are in their circle, who share their views, and nobody's actually coming out and saying what they're really feeling. It's kind of like we're just sweeping it under the rug.
Okay.
Is that what's happened? I don't know. What do you think?
I think a lot was swept under the rug already.
Yeah.
And I think now there's no more room. I think the conversations are coming out. How they manifest is how they manifest, you know? Like, things are coming out. Emotions are coming out.
Yeah.
You're right. We aren't listening. People aren't listening to each other. But how we get that to happen
It's difficult.
It's difficult only because it's happening, you know? It is happening. People are being forced to listen. In some situations, people are...
If they are, this is what I worry, that people really aren't listening. I mean, we'll have people on the show who will speak about, for instance, the truth and reconciliation process post-1994 not being sufficient. And there are people who will not comprehend that. And I've seen this in the studio, people expressing their views. And I almost find what happens a lot of the time is, as someone's expressing their views, I can see the other person not taking in what they're saying, not they understanding if they're talking about generational wealth, whatever it may be, but they're not even putting up a wall, formulating how they're going to respond and impose their opinion. So it's like a constant imposition of opinions. And I just wonder how we get around that. I mean, we're out at this conference around design and creativity and new ways of thinking. How do we change people's ways of thinking and apply to the context that really matters, which is the context of building a better nation?
You know, seeing as we are here in the context that we're in, we're at the Design Dub, but I think a good way is just creating work that reflects these conversations, because people aren't going to listen to me ranting into a microphone, and I know they won't, and I won't do that. Making more work.
And you could, by the way, you'd be more than well. I'll give it to you for 4 minutes. You have
I'm good.
240
I'm
seconds.
Good. I'm good. But yeah, no, I think making more work that's reflective of South African people's narratives, as well as admitting South African people's pain. And with that, that's where the discourse will be able to come from. Some people, I think, it's funny. It's like some people can't, like you said, you'll have be having a conversation with someone, and they will be thinking of all the ways they're going to tell you that's not true or you are wrong.
And we all do it. We're all guilty of it to some degree.
And, you know, that's not going to change because I spoke to you. That's only going to change if you see something, most likely.
It's art. Art is the ability to change the world in a very positive way. Well, listen, very cool hanging out. Give me the big payoff line. You end it. You end the interview. It's your movie. Wrap it up.
Okay. Wow. This was a really great conversation. This was my best first interview ever.
Rockstar.
This
there you
awesome.
Go.
Awesome. Yeah.
Fantastic. That's Khalerekwe Maimane there, a young creative and aspiring film director whose work is inspired by irrational fears and insecurities. But you know what? We need to rework that because she's a hell of a lot more than those lines. Khalerekwe, thank you so much for hanging out.
Thank you.
Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
Cool, so let me give you the backstory to why Lee Thompson's sitting in front of me. Producer Kat, I said to her, we're going to go to Cape Town for Design in Durba, and she instantaneously says to me that we have to interview her future husband, who hasn't met her yet, a guy by the name of Lee Thompson. And then when I saw the pictures, because she sent them through to me this morning, I was like, I can see what Producer Kat's doing here. She's trying to set herself up. So let's say what's happening to Lee Thompson. I mean, model's a bit of an understatement because you are, of course, the owner of the Insta Train Fitness Studio. So yes. I don't want to box you. How would you introduce yourself, Lee?
Well, it's always a difficult question, but to answer it, I'm a slasher, so a model slash business owner. Primarily, I'd say modeling. And then our own Insta Train Fitness Studio, which is currently based in Camps Bay. Yeah.
But the two work really well together, right? I mean, you've got to be fit in order to be a model, and then you've got to have something to fall back on. This model is like it's the Yanez model almost.
100%. I'm glad you acknowledge that because, I mean, obviously to be a model, you need to be skinny, lean, and fit and in shape. You know? So I thought, let me put the two together and start a gym, and I can kill two birds with one stone, which is basically what I've done.
Very, very dope. Where'd you grow up, bro?
I actually grew up in Port Elizabeth.
PE?
Good old PE. The friendly city. And then I moved to Pretoria, where I went to high school.
High school, yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't have crazy nights at Beliza in PE?
Fortunately not.
You'll throw your name away.
Okay. We'll keep it under the radar.
You threw it away in Pretoria.
Exactly. That's why I've left Pretoria and I'm in Cape Town now. And after attending high school at Pretoria Boys High School, proudly so, I moved to Cape Town and started the modeling thing full time.
Was it that case if someone just walks up to you randomly, or did you actively pursue it because everyone was like, dude, you got to get into this?
Well, actually a Facebook story, you know. So Facebook's obviously full of pictures and all about who you are. So they contacted me via Facebook, proudly with Boss Models, South Africa. And they flew me into Cape Town while I was still playing rugby professionally in Pretoria, actually, for a test shoot, which is basically just to see how you look on camera. And all went well, and they signed me, and I decided to hang up my rugby boots in 2012, and pursue the modeling career. And managed to travel the world a bit, and here I am today.
I mean, you were big on the rugby with the Blue Bulls under 19 captain, the Sharks under 21 team for 2 years, Tuck's first rugby team captain. So you were really killing it in a rugby space. Difficult to let it go?
It was, you know, it was a real heartache and a real tough decision to make. But I felt like I was playing for the salary, where before I would do anything to play or be a part of the team.
Yeah.
So with that, you know, with that thought and mindset, I decided to just move on to something else. And the modeling opportunity presented itself. I mean, I couldn't rock up at castings anymore with black eyes and stitches in my face.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of make a decision. And yeah, I think I made the right one. But I really did enjoy my rugby career.
Tell me about, though, what you learned from playing rugby on a semi-professional level, professional level in some instances, in terms of things that have helped you with life. Because I mean, there's such a discipline that comes out of playing a sport like that in the context of playing it professionally like you did, that you pick up a lot of life skills around leadership, around putting work in.
100%. I mean, without rugby, I don't think I'd be anywhere. I mean, it just teaches you so many different values and attributes that you can add to your life, like working together and working as a team, working with people. And yeah, without it, I don't think I'd be anywhere. You know, I do miss it, the camaraderie and that. But yeah, team sports teaches you a lot of discipline, responsibility,
yeah,
hard work, and just how to get along with other people, which is what life's about.
What are the misconceptions about this model thing? I mean, is Zoolander doing you a good name? Like, is he improving the brand of models worldwide, or is he messing it up?
You know, I think he's doing both, because he's making people more aware of the modeling world, but there's definitely a misperception on the whole stereotype of modeling, I'd say. I mean, people look at, or they think about a model, they think arrogant, stupid, like Zoolander would be. And yeah, like loads of shoots, and they just see the glamorous side of things, where it's actually a lot of hard work. Mm. I mean, you have to watch what you eat, and you have to attend castings regularly. Jobs don't come around all the time. I mean, you might have a month where you're shooting every second day and booking jobs, and the next month you might find yourself sitting with the mouth full of teeth.
Which is why you got to do the fitness stuff and start a company, yeah.
Exactly. I had the time to do so I thought I might as well use my time productively and start my business and manage both.
Absolutely. Now, is this Bay that you brought with you here?
Yes.
Well, is this Bay?
Bay / personal assistant / yeah, she's
amazing.
Wait,
man, see, now that's an interesting story. What do you mean personal assistant / Bay / like?
Well, put it this way, she dresses me.
Okay.
This is why I look like I did.
All right, yeah.
I'm maybe a model, but I don't know.
A blazer and everything. Okay, so yeah. Bay's put that together. Bay put the look together.
Bay rocks, yeah. She's actually a stylist as well.
Okay.
So she does a lot of things, you know. Yeah.
How long have you been going steady with Bay for?
Just under a year now.
Okay.
And yeah, I must say we work well together.
Yeah, Bae's blushing in the corner there. Yeah. She's like, I didn't know I was going to be roped into this.
This actually happened before, so she's not. She's actually used to it.
Listen, dude, you're going to be going to Germany soon, right? To do some modeling stuff. How does it change when you go to a different country? I mean, is it the same around the world? Is taking a good picture, or culturally, are there different references in different countries and different ways of working?
Yeah, well, actually, it's completely different. I mean, in South Africa, Cape Town, we have our way of doing things. I mean, it's outdoorsy, beach vibe, mountains, location shoots. Whereas in Germany, where I'm going, it's going to be more indoors and studio-related stuff. So more e-commerce, catalog work, which is based indoors. So not as glamorous or a little bit more boring, but definitely better money at the end of the day when you convert the euro to rands, yeah?
Definitely. Jeez, I mean, you can come back and buy the whole of Cape Town.
That's the whole point.
So listen, dude, just before we wrap it up, Producer Cat tells me that you're big into your poetry. So, I mean, what does that mean? Is that like...
Well, I'm a poet and I don't even know it, you know, so I don't know.
But so, tell me about expressing yourself in that way, because I mean, we're out at Design in Darba, so we're hanging out with some of the coolest creatives in the world, people that do unbelievable things. Imogen Heap is going to speak in a little bit. So talk to me about poetry as a way of you expressing yourself, because that's dope.
Exactly, yeah, it's a way of expressing yourself. So I'm more into quotes. I feel like a lot of meaning goes into few words and a real small paragraph, and I like to emphasize my life on those meanings. For example, Gandhi's ones are really great. I mean, be the change you wish to see in the world.
Yeah.
Those type of things. And I just try to live by that each day. I mean, I have a book of quotes. Some of them are ones that I wrote myself.
Yeah.
And some of them are ones that I take from well-known people, and I just try and convert it and put it into my life and live my life by those ways. And it's helped me a lot.
Very, very cool. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. I hope that Producer Cat doesn't cling on to you too much as you try and leave. Producer Cat, you've heard now that Lee has bae. He has a bae. This is the thing. But, I mean, there's still hope. You got any friends that we can hook Producer Cat up with? Could we go through the Boss Models portfolio and find some...
Yeah, well, I'm going to Boss tomorrow, so she can come with and we can take a pic.
If you could send
as long
us,
as I'm a favorite, it's
if,
okay.
If you could send us some headshots, then she'll take a look and get back to you. Is that okay?
Deal.
Rockstar. Listen, Lee, how do we keep up with you all day?
You can catch me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Catch me just before I head to Germany. And, yeah.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's been awesome.
Such a pleasure.
Yes.
That there is Lee Thompson, so much more than just a good-looking face. He has his own fitness studio, and I have no doubt that you're going to do unbelievable things moving on in the future. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
Kelman on cliffcentral.com.
All right, let's say hello to Fiona Mpungu, who's doing some unbelievable stuff in a fabric and textile space as a fabric and textile enthusiast. I was looking at some of your cushions just now and your pillows. You also produce kaftans, kimono-styled bathrobes, shawls. Of course, you do it under the umbrella of Sankofa Creations, which is your labor of love. You're just in a relationship with, like, cushions and robes. And, I mean, you're just that kid that took them a lot more seriously than the other kids. I don't know. Is that the right approach here?
I think you're in the right direction.
Okay.
Yes, I am very passionate about the fabric. It's something that's very close to my heart. And it kind of ties in with the way I grew up and where I studied and what I studied. So it's really just... it's intertwined into all my life experiences. So I'm very passionate about it, and I wanna express this passion that I have, and I wanna share it with other people.
Now, why do they keep telling me that you're this deep academic individual with deep academic roots? What does that mean? What have you studied that this is what they're all telling you?
I know. When I read it, I was like, wow, okay. I'm like, maybe 2 PhDs.
What degree is that, deep academic roots?
I love school. I love school, and I did my undergrad in the States. I studied African history.
Wow.
And they call it their Black Studies. Something that I never thought I would do when I was younger, but also just driven by curiosity and wanting to know more about where I come from, where the rest of my friends and my community comes from. So it got me thinking that I took one class, and then
That was it.
And then I was like, I'm going straight with it.
So where did you study that over in the States?
In the States, in Nebraska, called
cool.
UNO, University of Nebraska.
Now, you know that the Oscars are happening at the moment, and there's this whole Oscar So White thing, and they're saying that there's too many white people at the Oscars, there's no black nominees in the best acting categories, and the Oscars being sort of heavily criticized for their lack of representation. In the context of America, because I've been to America, but I haven't studied there.
Mm.
I mean, what's that country getting wrong in terms of moving forward?
To be honest, I think...
You've studied this sort of at university, so
yeah.
You would have been pretty immersed in their space.
I was definitely immersed, and I got to interact with, like, all races and in, like, different, like, contexts, you know? So I think, in my opinion, and not to put it out there as if I'm extreme... expert. I just think, you know, it's something that's so ingrained into their culture and society that needs to be addressed more openly. And it's really just, it's like something that's, I don't want to say that it's like a root that is like, it's really deep. It's really deep and it's long and it needs to be removed. And it's going to take time. I believe that comparing like America to South Africa, especially, that there's so many parallels, because I wrote my thesis just trying to understand apartheid and understand slavery and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of similarities, and it's interesting when you actually you go and do the research and you try to understand, because people are people at the end of the day, and there's different things that motivate people to act the way they act. And that's now, this is now after you remove all the labels and the identities we give each other. So there's a lot that needs to be done, but I think the younger generations are definitely going to get it right. It's like a generational thing where you kind of like let things go, we forgive, and a lot of work has to take place.
So much. And I like that metaphor for the roots are really deep, because I think it's like, I don't know, it's like grass. So grass grows, the roots are really deep, then you cut the grass, you take off like a centimeter off of it, and you think everything's fine, but you don't realize what's happening underneath the ground.
Exactly.
Because I think that's what we do a hell of a lot. And then it takes, like, in a South African context, like a penny sparrow. And then everyone just remembers how deep those roots are.
It snowballs because it's there, you know?
So bringing all of the stuff that's going around and happening in the world, I mean, we know that some of the greatest art comes out of the most trying times. That's historically proven.
Mm-hmm.
So in the context of the world that we live in, this is Africa that we live in,
mm-hmm.
I mean, for you, you're expressing so much, even if it is just a cushion.
Mm.
I mean, the cushion's kind of representative of your human experience, right?
Yes.
It's your art.
Yeah. The fabric is definitely an expression of my my experiences, and I'm really... What I'm really trying to express with the different products that I make is I want to tell the story actually behind the material, behind the patterns, behind the people that make it. Why do you use those specific colors, those specific prints? What do you use that fabric for, like in terms of your cultural traditions?
Yeah.
So I'm working to kind of put those two things together with my products. I haven't gone that far to write the stories, but that's definitely an avenue I want to take as well.
Powerful. And you're, of course, an emerging creative out at the Design Indaba Festival. That's a cool thing to put on the CV, right?
It definitely is. I am super excited and just I feel so blessed and grateful. It's like something that I actually dreamt about being at the Design Indaba, either as a delegate, but more so as... someone who's exhibiting their products. And at that point when I was dreaming about it, I was like, what? I hadn't really visualized or even started with Sankofa. So I was just like, yeah, one day I really want to be there. And I don't know, I just...
Powerful. Now you're here.
Yeah, I know.
Now it's tricky because you got to think what's the next thing, because that's always overwhelming as well. Like once you achieve something, then what's the next thing?
Yeah.
It's hard out here. It's difficult when you get something that you wanted because then you need to find something else to want. It's hard.
You're right. Yes.
Give me the power line, the quote that you live by, Fiona, the thing that's going to get everybody pumped up about the rest of their day, the rest of their year, the thing that gets you through. You know, it's that cheesy Instagram pull-out thing.
Now I got to think. let me think. What gets me through the day? Okay, yeah. This is I've got a son. He's 5 years old, and usually after a long day and like you're tired and you're drained, he'll just look at me and he'll be like, "Mommy, tomorrow's another day, you know, and it's gonna be a beautiful day." So it's just that thing of like, you push as much as you can and do the best that you can, because tomorrow's another day. You'll have another opportunity to do better or do good. Yeah.
Powerful. Mm. I take it. That's Fiona Mpungu there. Sankofa Creations is, of course, her company. It's a labor of love that grew from a fascination of textiles to the flourishing small business that it is today. Fiona, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kelman on cliffcentral.com.
It is Pitbull and Kesha. It's called Timber and Kelman on Cliff Central as we wrap up all our Design Indaba 2016 coverage live from the Mother City at the Artscape Theatre. Producer Kat, some closing words before we head into the weekend?
Mm. These chips are delicious. It's very
producer
cold
Kat
outside.
Has gone and totally raided the food truck outside and brought back some seriously, seriously slapped chips. But it's been a good run, right?
Mm. It was good. Thank you, Cape Town, for having us. Thank you, Designer Dara. Thank you, NetBank. Thank you, everybody. Just everybody.
There you go. We will be live on Monday from 4 p.m. in our home in Johannesburg. Where
boring Johannesburg.
No, not boring Johannesburg. I love home. I do.
What do you love about Joburg?
I just love Johannesburg.
There's no mountains.
I love
no
sitting
beach.
On William Nicol for 2 hours in traffic and everyone's just angry and aggravated and there's no mountain to look at. I actually enjoy that.
Yeah, let's just go take a walk on the beach after the show.
One last walk on the beach. We'll do this all again on Monday between 4 and 6. Hey, don't forget, producer Kat doesn't want to hear this, but I have
what?
To tell you anyway. Next week, hanging out at the Brit Awards in association with Virgin Atlantic. Going to be so, so dope.
We don't want
as,
to know that.
As Titi and Teta and I spend 1 day in London. We will hit it on Tuesday night and bring you all the action from the Brit Awards. Featuring Justin Bieber, Rihanna, Adele. Gonna be so, so dope. There is a lot to look forward to next week. Next week gonna be a good, good week. Producer Kat, thank you very much.
Huh?
Thank you. Just because you're not coming. Don't worry, you're gonna be able to get the podcast. Like, you know?
No, just keep your podcast.
We'll do this all again on Monday.
Thanks, Jono, for running the desk.
Yeah, thanks, so Jono. Shout out to Jono. Back up in the JHB.
Next year, he's coming to Cape Town with us. We can't leave him again.
Shout out to everyone responsible for not activating the live link off the floor. Now we know which button to press for future reference, everybody. Kelman on cliffcentral.com.